Okay, so we're going to do a couple things tonight. First, I have something new, but we will be using the packets too. But I want to first give out something we'll do just briefly, I think, the thing I'm handing out. Now, if you're listening online, you can click on the file called Comparing Mishnah Brura and Aruch HaShulchan. Comparing Mishnah Brura and Aruch HaShulchan. And that will be posted right there with it. So where we ended last week, So where we ended last week, very good. Everyone's got it? Okay. So where we ended last week, we were talking about the Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan at the very bottom of page 3, if you're on it. And we said the similarity is that they're both commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, which is helpful. They're both ones you'd open up to learn at Shulchan Aruch. But there are differences between them. Hi, welcome. But there are differences too. And we pointed out some of the differences, but instead of telling you them, we'll look at them. We'll see them inside. That's for you. So in this, it says, comparing Mishnah Brura and Aruch HaShulchan. So if anyone did the homework, this will be a little bit of review, if you didn't have to do the homework. But the end of the homework, you would have seen this. But let's look at it. So in this little packet, comparing Mishnah Brura and Aruch HaShulchan, if you turn to the first two page, pages 2 and 3 of the packet, on the left you have Mishnah Brura, and on the right-hand side of the page, the right page, you have Aruch HaShulchan. Now, I purposely picked the same topic for both to compare them. That's over here. Yeah. Yeah. So the topic here that I chose here is sleeping in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Okay? Because Shmini Atzeret is a very unique day. The Gemara is very clear outside of Israel because we have a doubt. Is it Shmini Atzeret? Is it still Chol HaMoed? All right. If it's still Chol HaMoed, then you would definitely sleep in the sukkah, assuming you ever sleep in the sukkah. You would definitely eat in the sukkah. The problem is it's not. It's Shmini Atzeret. But because of the doubt, we say maybe it's still Chol HaMoed, so we treat it like it's Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara is very clear that on Chol HaMoed you should sit in the sukkah, meaning eat in the sukkah, but don't make the bracha of Leishev Basukkah. That way you get out of the problem. Right? On Shmini Atzeret. On Shmini Atzeret, yeah. So that's what the Gemara is very clear, that you should sit in the sukkah, but you should not make a bracha of leishev, because again, Shmini Atzeret is not a sukkah day. It's not a day that you would sit in the sukkah. It's Shmini Atzeret is after the 7 days. On the other hand, we have this doubt, maybe it's still day number 7. So we split the difference. You sit in the sukkah, but you don't make the bracha of leishev. That's what the Gemara says. Can't argue. The Gemara says that's the halacha, the Rishonim, the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rush. Can't really argue with that, right? That's non-negotiable. And most people do that today. However, the Gemara doesn't talk about sleeping in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. The Gemara doesn't talk about using a lulav and etrog on Shmini Atzeret, outside of Israel. The Gemara doesn't talk about what if it's raining or cold. We'll see why that matters in a minute. The Gemara doesn't talk about what if it's not a full meal? What if it's just fruits or just candy or something like that? Is there more of a leniency to eat inside? All week there's a leniency. Maybe there's even more of a leniency on Shmini Atzeret. Right? So these are all negotiable, right? Meaning the Gemara doesn't say. So we need the Rishonim to try and navigate that based on what the Gemara says. And that's what we're going to see right now. So the Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan deal with this in different ways, and specifically sleeping in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Right? We have to eat without a bracha. What about sleeping? What would be the pros and cons? Eating without a bracha, all week you normally make a bracha, Shmini Atzeret, right? So you can not make the bracha, and thereby
still talking leishev bracha.
Exactly, the bracha okay. Of leishev, exactly. So since I made a bracha all week, I won't make a bracha on Shmini Atzeret, and that is how I will demonstrate that I know that it is Shmini Atzeret. But sleeping,
no bracha.
There's no bracha. We never make a leishev on sleeping, even if you sleep in the sukkah. So that's one way of approaching it, right? The other way of approaching it is to say, when it comes to eating, eating is something that people normally sometimes do in the sukkah, or in a sukkah outside, right? Eating outside is a normal thing for people to do, right? People sometimes like to eat outside in their hut, you know, it's a normal thing. So if I eat outside on Shmini Atzeret, does that necessarily show that I think it's a Yom Tov, or that I think it's one day or another? No, it's just, it's nice out. And that's exactly what Tosfot says. We're not going to see all of this, but Tosfot says the reason you don't take a lulav, shake a lulav on Shmini Atzeret, is because eating is something people might do anyway outside, but who would, right, so maybe I just want to, it's not a mitzvah, but a lulav is clearly a mitzvah. Even if I shake a lulav without a bracha, it's clearly a mitzvah. Nobody on earth takes a branch and a lemon and shakes them. You'd have to be nuts, right? Clearly it's for the mitzvah. Right? So ironically, we're trying to avoid doing a mitzvah, right? Because if you do a mitzvah, that shows that you think it's still Chol HaMoed when those mitzvot apply. So we're trying to avoid that. So eating and then sleeping is somewhere in between, right? Do you sleep outside? Maybe not as often as eating. Some people, right, you might go and sleep outside. But what if it's cold? What if it's raining? Right? If it's really raining all week, you have a dispensation, you can go inside. But what if it's kind of raining? If it's all based on what's normal to be done to show that I don't think it's Chol HaMoed and it's drizzling, I better go inside. And it's exactly what we'll see the Aruch HaShulchan says. But I want to show you. So first of all, okay. Well, that doesn't have this. She may need to share. No, you're fine. I'm sorry. This is a different thing I just gave out. that's great. Yeah, perfect. So on the left-hand side of the page, you have Mishnah Berurah. Right? And as we saw last week, on the top of the page, you have Shulchan Aruch and Ramah. Right? Sfardim, Ashkenazim, Shulchan Aruch, Ramah, on the top of the page. And if you look three words before the end of the first line on the page, right, 1, 2, 3, right, the first line, the last three words are Mipnei Shehu Safek. What's right before the word Mipnei, immediately before? Right, above in parentheses. Okay, that's a hypertext, as we call them nowadays. It's a hypertext, right? It's a hyperlink. Okay, that sends us to the parallel Vav in the Mishnah Berurah. So now we go halfway down the page, and we have the Mishnah Berurah. And the fifth line of the page of the Mishnah Berurah has another Vav. Right?
Yeah.
So the fifth line of the Mishnah Berurah on the left, on the right-hand side of the Mishnah Berurah. Exactly. Okay. And without going through the Mishnah Berurah word for word, what he says here, he quotes different opinions about sleeping, right? Some say yes, some say no. He quotes a Mordechai, who's a Rishon, we talked about the big three Rishonim, Rif, Rambam, Rush. The Mordechai might be number four, right? The Mordechai. Not the one from the Megillah, separate Mordechai. So the Mordechai says that you should not sleep in a sukkah. So he quotes that. He quotes that, but disagrees with it. But he quotes people. Right. So he's quoting different opinions here about whether or not you should sleep in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. And then he makes an extension from that to the idea of fruits or non-leishev basukka foods. And if you look where there's a chet. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines before the end, 6 lines before the bottom of the Mishnah Berurah there. Perfect, right? He says, Yesh Omrim, some people say, Dehu Adin, that the same thing would be true, De'ein Ochlin, Az Peirot, that you shouldn't eat fruits. If assuming you should sleep in the sukkah, then you can't even eat fruits outside the sukkah. Dehu Adin Pat, Pachot Mikabetzah, or even bread, less than...
Is this the Mordechai still
talking? No. He's saying this on his own.
Okay.
Right. Klalo shel davar, he says, the bottom line is, kol davar she'in tzrichin levarich alav birkat leishei basukah, bishari meisukah, any foods that you would normally not make a leishei basukah, like fruits or vegetables, ein ochlin basukah bashmini atzeret. You should not eat in the sukkah. Why? Why? No, because if you didn't make a leishev the rest of the week,
because you're eating fruit.
Oh. Right.
Then you're not eating fruit. Then you might think still think it is.
Ah, there's no way. Right, then there's no way to differentiate.
I'm not sure people would think that much.
Unless what?
I'm not sure anyone would think about it that. Like you must not be doing.
Right, right.
Well, I'm sorry, I feel like I missed a step
here. Fine.
If I come into the sukkah during Sukkot, during Chol HaMoed, and I'm going to eat and drink and socialize, I have my friend over, but it's not a meal.
Right.
Wouldn't I still do lashav?
No. We assume not. That's actually a different discussion, and we assume not. Right,
That's what was hanging me up here.
Okay. Yeah, there's a minor opinion that if you're really going to spend a long time there, but we're assuming not. He's assuming for these purposes, no. If you're just eating fruits and vegetables, then you would not.
So as long as I stopped you. I have another question, and maybe I'm just slow. Just in the technical counting, if Sukkot is 7 days, isn't Shmini Atzeret falling on the seventh day? And that's
It's number eight, Shmini.
Oh, it is H.
Yeah, Shmini. That makes sense. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Right. It's clearly the eighth day.
So I have a question about that. Maybe it's completely off topic, but the whole because you said the premise is it's a doubtful. Is it really the seventh or the eighth day? But it's not doubtful.
Right. Well, that's a larger discussion. That's a different shear that we don't really have doubts. We have a calendar and.
Not only that, if it's doubtful, then how do we know the first day of Yom Tov isn't a non-Yom Tov, and we're really working on the third day? Whole thing goes wrong if you start saying there's doubts.
Yeah, that's why, there's only a 48-day window, a 48-hour window, a two-day window that we assume could be. That's why we don't, otherwise the whole year could be, right? So it's either day one or day two. That's why day one is obviously Yom Tov, the whole world keeps that, and then day two is the doubtful day. We keep it as Yom Tov, and Israel they don't, because they don't have the doubt. And then again day seven. So day seven for us is definitely Yom Tov. I'm sorry, day eight is Yom Tov. What we call day nine is for them Simchat Torah, right? They combine that with Shemini Atzeret. So day eight is definitely Yom Tov, and day nine is the possibility. By day 10, or day three on the other side, it's definitely not.
So I'm back on your original question, because I couldn't hear what Colin said. Sorry.
Okay.
That you couldn't differentiate.
Right, because if the rest of the week I would have eaten fruits anyway without making a leshei basukkah, right, because they're fruits, I would go into the sukkah and just eat fruits or vegetables or water, right? So then if I go in on Shmini Atzeret and I eat fruits and I'm still not making a leshei basukkah, but there's no way to tell that I don't think it's Shmini Atzeret.
It's sukkahs.
Right? There's no way. There has to be a way of drawing a distinction.
So your behavior looks the same as it did during the
same. So you
want to make your behavior different.
Right. There has to be a change in the behavior, exactly. Okay. Otherwise we look at you doing that action and say, maybe he thinks it's Chol HaMoed, which is a problem because that disrespects me. We always err on the side of respecting Yom Tov over, we always, that's why we always, if we have a doubt, if we're not sure, we always prefer to show that it's Yom Tov, since we know it is. Otherwise, it's an embarrassment to Yom Tov that you still think it's Chol HaMoed, right, while you're sitting in it's really a paradox to sit in a sukkah on Shmini Atzeret, and yet on Shmini Atzeret, sitting in the sukkah at all is a paradox. The only reason it's allowed is because you have the leishev that you said all week and you stopped saying to show that you don't think that it is Yom Tov.
It's really about being obligated. You're not obligated. That's
right.
You don't say leishev.
Right.
But you can still sit there.
Because it's nice to do. But if it's raining,
you should go in.
Then you should go in. Mm-hmm. And that's the Mishnah Berurah. Right. In a nutshell, the Mishnah Berurah, he's hewing very closely to the sources before him. He's not going out on a limb. Not that creative. He does make this extension to non-leishev foods. But even that, if you look in his footnotes, he's getting from earlier sources. Right, he's not as creative, not as independent. The Aruch HaShulchan is the opposite.
So it's good to be a woman in this case.
What?
Because you don't have to say this, okay.
I know, right, there you go. Get out of, just be a woman, get out of all the doubts.
It's always me,
it's her.
What is this up here?
So the top of the page is the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Is the Shulchan Aruch, yeah. Right,
the
top.
Very top? I thought that was Gemara.
No, that's Shulchan Aruch. The top five lines on the page are Shulchan Aruch. There actually is no Ramah on this particular page. But if there was, it would be smaller type, or we talked about that, not bold. But the top of the page is Shulchan Aruch, Orach Chaim, because remember, Mishneh Berurah only talks about the Orach Chaim section of Shulchan Aruch. And then you have his Mishneh Berurah commentary partway down the page. See? So you have Shulchan Aruch at the top, and the Mishneh Berurah is taken on somewhat of a life of its own, but it's really a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam.
So there's not going to be a danger of duplicating. Would there be another Vav here that I might get confused
So that's where you have to be careful, because there might be. But the difference is there won't be a Vav that is not Rashi script and has parentheses. So you might have a Rashi Vav, Rashi-looking Vav. Mm. You might have one with brackets instead of parentheses. You might have one that is a smaller, you know, kind of in the air versus, you know, taking up the whole space. So, you know, you always have to match up the matching things. Mm. That's kind of the game. In fact, just if you look what I mean by in the air, look at the word Zman on the second line on the top of the page. See the word Zman?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a little gimel, tiny gimel floating in the air.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So that is a different, that's different than, so that matches up with, right, that matches up with right on the left. We'll talk about that later. Berhagola.
Sure,
the Berhagola. Yeah. So that matches up with the Berhagola.
Right, so you have to look at whether there's parentheses or
brackets,
whether it's Rashi script or regular script.
Exactly. And that's the whole navigation game in a nutshell, right? It's always just finding the matching letter.
I don't see the Berhagola.
It's on the left.
Oh, over here.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And that's actually, the Berhagola is important because that sends us backwards in time to earlier sources, meaning where is the Shulchan Aruch getting this from? So the gimel that you found before the word Zman matches up with the gimel just to the left of that. And then it says, Memra, what is it? Shum, same place in the Gemara as the last footnote. Memra de Rabbi Yochanan, it's the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. Karav Nachman, right? So he's quoting, he's saying it's from the Gemara, it's from the Torah, the Beit Yosef. So that is sending us backwards in time to where this source came from. Right, so that's a useful source, useful navigation tool.
So can I ask one more quick question? In terms of the Mishneh Berurah, I always think of that as more Ashkenazim versus the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch seems to have the weight,
right.
But the Mishneh Berurah is for me as Ashkenazim.
True, it is. He is Ashkenazi. He was living in around 1900 in Poland, Raden. So it's true. Sfaradim are less likely to learn Mishneh Berurah.
Right.
But the Shulchan Aruch himself, of course, has the Ramah built into it, which is Ashkenazi too. So you have both of them on the top of the page. Mishneh Berurah is Ashkenazi.
Right. But since there wasn't a Ramah here, I thought.
Right. Correct.
I just wanted
if there's if there's no Ramah, then there is Ramah. Because that means the Ramah agrees,
right? That's true.
By being
no
silent,
class,
right?
By
being silent, he's essentially agreeing to whatever was said.
Okay.
So you have his, stamp of approval on the thing anyway.
Okay.
Can you just say again what the Be'er Hagola?
So the Be'er Hagola,
who that is? Is that a somebody or that's a something? Just
it's a navigation tool that would send you backwards in time from the Shulchan Aruch, which is the year 1500, to an earlier source that he got it from.
And who? Did the Mishneh Berurah
put that in? No, it's earlier. I don't remember. It's around mid 1800s, that navigation. So it's early. Mid 1700s, that navigation tool. And it's footnotes. It's not right. It's just sending you. It's saying this halacha came from the Gemara, or this halacha came from the Rambam, or see this Torah, see this Beit Yosef, and he's sending you backwards to where these, you know, so you have an earlier source and you could look it up.
So where's the this tiny little gimel Zman at the end of the first sentence, I guess.
Right.
Where do we find that gimel referenced again?
Directly to the left of that.
How do we know that?
Oh, here's a little script.
Well, it's just a gimel.
What is that?
It's a gimel on its own.
Oh, so this gimel right here is this
exactly
gimel here. Okay.
Yeah. The gimel before Zman matches up with the kind of bolder, slightly bigger gimel in the Berhagola to the left. And that tells you, oh, this is from the Gemara over there. You can look it up. Look at this Rambam. It's sending you backwards in history to the earlier books, and then you can look them up.
So this is totally dependent on the printing press.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got all different kinds of type. And
oh, yeah.
It's really
it's
very font-related.
Right. Yeah, it's like hyperlink. I mean, it's really, we were doing hyperlinking thousands of years before anybody else, because that's what it is. You go backwards, and we'll see this a little later about going from the Gemara. What if I'm in a Gemara and I want to learn a halacha? You know, how do you jump? Okay, so sleeping in a sukkah, the Aruch HaShulchan takes a very different approach, and he's very creative. So that's the right, exactly, the right-hand page. What do you notice about the page?
There's some
print's bigger.
Right. Okay. Right.
It's all one.
Yeah, it's one continuous thing. There's no Shulchan Aruch and Ramah. So he quotes them when he needs to, but we said last week there's no Shulchan Aruch and Ramah right there on the page. Right?
So what's at the top? What's this top?
Oh, that's
here?
The previous chapter of Aruch HaShulchan, yeah. Okay. And then he starts the new chapter, yeah. I know.
Right.
So if you look on the bottom of the right where there's some underlining, he says, Ochlim b'shmini atzeret, basukah, balayla, uveyom. You should eat in the sukkah, on shmini atzeret, at night, and in the daytime, right? Mm-hmm. And he quotes the Gemara. Ein mevarachin al yeshiva, don't make the bracha on it, leishev, right? Mm-hmm. Straight up like the Gemara. Not surprising.
Did you underline this or
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, I underline it. Right? Straight up like the Gemara. And he says that's the Gemara. But he says, fourth line, he says, mikomakom, fifth line. But in any, but even still, ra'inu bazeh, baposkim minhagim shonim. And yet we see various different minhagim that have crept up over the millennia regarding eating in the sukkah, Hanshmini Aseret, and we all know that. So he's more honest about what's really going on around him. He was a community rabbi. He knew what was really happening. The Chavetz Chaim, the Mishneh Berurah, he, you know, had a little yeshiva, but he wasn't out in the world. He didn't. So some people say they prefer Aruch HaShulchan because he saw what was really going on. He was very much a man of community with the people. So his name was Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein. Yechiel Michal Epstein. And he lived in around the year 1900. So,
1829.
Yeah, 1829 to 1908.
And he was worldly.
Well, yes,
worldly
in the sense of community oriented. He was community oriented. You're right. Not worldly in the sense of necessarily knowing science or math, but in the sense of being a man of the people. So he says there's all these different minhagim. Now, what's funny about the Aruch HaShulchan is, first he says that that's terrible and you have to do what the Gemara says. And if you read till the end of Halacha Gimel, paragraph Gimel, you know, the top of the next column, paragraph Gimel, that's where he ends. If you stop there, and that's why he's often quoted out of context about things. Because you read till the end of Gimel, and it sounds like he's made his decision, this is terrible, there's nothing, there's no room to negotiate, right? You have to eat at night, eat in the day. He says, sleep in the sukkah, finished. Now, then he gets into paragraph Dalet. I don't know why he does paragraphs, because by the end of paragraph Gimel, he's made his decision, and then he says, well, you know, maybe there is a way to justify these different minhagim, and then sometimes he'll go back afterwards and go in the opposite direction. But paragraph Dalet, ha'amnam, but he says, in my humble opinion, yesh tam ki ikar b'minhagan shel Yisrael. He says, there has to be a reason for the different minhagim of Jews. He says, we can't just throw these minhagim aside. Eating only at night in the sukkah, only in the day. Kiddush at night, we've all seen these, right? Kiddush in the sukkah and then go inside, or vice versa. He says, there has to be a reason. And here's what it is. And here he quotes the lulav situation. He says, when it came to lulav, there was a clear, no one says to, he says, Tosfot says specifically, black on white, not to use your lulav on Shmini Atzeret, because there's no way to do it in a way that won't make it look like you're doing a mitzvah.
Muxa.
Like we talked, because it's muksa. Right? It's muksa. And even if it wasn't muksa, who shakes a lulav and etrog for not a mitzvah?
Well, it's muksa because you can't do it in a way that won't make it look like a
right,
mitzvah.
Exactly. It's clearly a mitzvah. It's a muksa.
You can't do it because it's
right.
A mitzvah.
It's
for sukkahs. That's
right.
It's
clearly a mitzvah. So he says, so now go to halacha hey. Ulafi zen, because of this, sorry about the acronyms, Asi Shapir. He says the whole thing makes sense. B'medinot hachamim, when we were living in the warmer climates, see this? Right? Kamo b'bavel, when we were living in Iraq, historically, right, before this. Uvi medinot hamaraviot, or western countries. V'hadromiot, or southern countries. V'sukot ha'avir memuzag, where it's nice out. It's kind of nice out. Right? It's nice out, relatively speaking, usually on Sukkot. V'tov. Sorry, v'vadai dechayavim le'achov li'shon b'shmini atzeret. That's why the Gemara says you should eat and sleep in the, or eat, and then we assume sleep also, in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Because you're because there's no, because it's not definitely a mitzvah, because some people do that. But he says now we're living in Eastern Europe, and he's living in Poland. If you think about Russia, America, you might say too, is colder than it was, right? So he says the Gemara, and I said 20 minutes ago that there's nothing to negotiate about the Gemara. The Gemara says you do it, that's it. I was tricking you. He says, yes, you can negotiate about this Gemara. He says, even eating, there's room to negotiate because that was assuming you're living in a warm climate. The Gemara could not have anticipated that we would move to these cold parts of the world where whenever you go out into the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret, you're clearly doing it because it's a mitzvah.
Really? How can you say the Gemara never anticipated?
The Gemara did not... Right, you're right, but it wasn't anticipating when it said that. It could have said, oh, and by the way, if it's... So he's assuming the Gemara would agree that if people go to a colder climate en masse, you know, then you can change that minhag. See how creative, right? Very creative. Not building it off of nothing. He's not just saying, well, you know, it's uncomfortable. Yeah. He's building it off of what came before him because you have the fact that lulav and maybe sleeping, there's no way to show that it's not a mitzvah and therefore you shouldn't do it. Sleeping is the question, but lulav for sure. So here also, eating in a cold climate on Shmini Atzeret, it's clearly for the sake of a mitzvah. Who would go out, right? Right? Now, this is still has wiggle room because at least here, now America is somewhere in between. Some years it's cold, some years it's not. So you might say, well, right, it's never going to be pleasant in Russia. And he says, well, you could say that about the whole week, you know, that you could end up in, but he's saying you could say that about the rest of Sukkot because you're never supposed to be in the Sukkot if it's really hard for you. But he says if you go that far, the whole mitzvah of Sukkot would be lost forever. So he says we're not going to go that far the rest of the week. But when it comes to Shmini Atzeret, and anyway, we have this dispensation, this way out because you don't have, because you have to show that it's not a mitzvah for you to do it, that you don't think it's really Shmini Atzeret. I'm sorry, that you do think it's really, you don't think it's Chol HaMoed. So he says, it's in Russia, you'd say, forget it. It's better not to go out at all. Or at least he can justify the minhag that people don't. He doesn't say you really shouldn't, but at least he likes to, another reason people misunderstand the Aruch HaShulchan is because people say he's very lenient. And people say Mishneh Berurah is very strict. He's machmir all the time, he's strict, and the Aruch HaShulchan is very lenient. That's not always true. People will take all of this out of context, not just the first paragraph. You can say the whole thing, he's saying forget Shmini Atzeret, eating in the sukkah. He's not really saying that. He's saying there are people who have these minhagim about eating at night but not in the day, or eating at day and not in the night, or kiddush inside and sukkah outside. He's saying those people have legs to stand on for it. He's not saying that's preferred. And he has other cases, bugs and vegetables, he's lenient. But he's not being lenient. He's just saying, I see people not doing this anyway, so I'll give you a reason why that might be. Right, they're not just making it up. There might be, he's not preferring it, right? Even though he's a book of halacha, he's conversational to the point where he'll say, I think I can see why people got into this habit. Mm.
So it's like where they came from, where their ancestors
right,
came from.
Right, I see where they're...
Things slip, you know? This is so close,
right.
You could slip into something that,
right.
And forget or miss something.
Right. But anyway, that's the style of the Aruch HaShulchan overall, very different than the Mishneh Berurah. He's going off on his own, he's creative, he's saying, well, you know, it's not just that I don't want to sit in the sukkah, it's just that you have this idea of lulav, and now you can understand night and on the day and not in the, right? Why would I then eat in the sukkah at night but not in the day? Maybe because that's the main minhag. Day and not in the night, because who goes out at night? That's even weirder, right? It sounds weird to not eat in the sukkah at night for dinner and then go in during lunch, but he says that makes sense. Because the night, if you're going out at night, it's dark, it's cold, right? It's even more clearly because it's a mitzvah. It's even more clearly, right? Because who goes out at night? Now it's cold and it's dark. That makes no sense. At least in the day, it's probably a little bit warmer. It's also light out. So you're trying to at least only do it if there's some way of proving that it is not a mitzvah, which in the day is better than at night.
So
So people like in our community, do people have a family tradition on this of what they do, or how does that?
They might, yeah. Some people definitely do. Some people will do what their fathers did, or, you know, if they don't know what their fathers did, then they might do what their community rabbi does. You know, he'll ask them, and they'll
see. Chassidim have a different minhag.
Right. Could be, right? Chassidim versus, right? Community versus another community. Right. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's so unsettled, right? Because what you're seeing is the Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan are both very, not ambivalent, but they don't come to a firm conclusion about it. The Mishnah, yeah, they're fluid. The Mishnah Brura says black on white that eating fruits and things, he says, you can do what you want. Sleeping, he doesn't say that, but he doesn't come to a firm conclusion, right? Aruch HaShulchan justifies all these different minhagim. So you kind of look around, see what people are doing. If you're in a community where everybody's doing one way, maybe that's the thing to do. I think in our community it seems to be split, right? There are people who do eat in the Sokhan Shemini Atzeret, some people don't. Not sure how many people sleep. Most people anyway, the rest of the week, don't sleep in the Sokha, myself included, so I wouldn't start doing it on Shemini Atzeret unless that's a way to differentiate itself. Yeah, because it's right, because the rest of the week I didn't. So, okay. So
did I miss something that was about the fruit? I thought the Mishnah Brura was like, we don't eat fruit because you can't. There's no way to differentiate.
Well, then he says it could be either way. Okay. But you're right, that's the part we saw. Now,
and where did the Aruch HaShulchan live?
He lived in, I want to say, Poland, or actually, I think Russia. I think Russia.
Parallel to the.
Same part of the world, exactly. Same part of the world. But the Mishnah Brura doesn't. One second, but the Mishnah Brura still is not going to say, "Hey, it's okay to eat outside half the time." Right? He's just not kind of. He's locked into a more, and yet he goes into the fruit business. You know, fruits and non-leishay foods. Right, a little creative, but he's not going to go out on a limb and say, "I see all these different minhagim, and it's okay because we can compare it to this case of lulav, and you see, you have to differentiate, and if you're eating." In a cold climate, right? He's going to get into all that. Right? Yeah.
So I'm just looking at the two. So you know, if I want
to. Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking one something up in the Mishnah Brura, and then I want to. Right. So you've got the Tafresh Sami.
Right. Exactly. Same chapter. Right.
But like, what's the Vav here? You just happen to select Vav because.
Well, that's the one. Yeah, that's the one we needed. The Vav. There's.
How does it connect to?
It doesn't connect to here at all.
I know
Correct.
It can't because
right.
he's got his own. But
right.
how do I?
So the vav at the top.
Why did you choose vav? Because
that's the one that talked about fruits and sleeping.
Oh, okay. So both of these, it doesn't have anything.
Right. There was a Mishnah Brura Aleph.
So this covers everything.
Oh yeah.
And then this is going to cover everything from Aleph, wherever Aleph was.
Right.
The page
right. So now you see what I mean. Like from last week, that the Aruch HaShulchan is like a running essay.
Right. And there's no
Shulchan Aruch. Exactly. So to know anything, you have to read everything. You have to just read. All right, and you know, read a while, and don't stop at any one paragraph because he might flip his opinion in the next paragraph. Mm-hmm. Right now, some people prefer it; it's a little more conversational, it's informal, it's fun to read. But on the other hand, from a systematic perspective, it's not as good because, right? I prefer this. I prefer the Mishnah Brura because you can read the Shulchan Aruch and then you read the commentary on the bottom Mishnah Brura when you need it. You go back and forth. It's like reading Chumash and Rashi.
Right.
As opposed to a running essay.
But once you picked Bob,
right.
did you know page 149, did you literally have to read literally all the way through to find this whole section?
No, because they're both chapter Tuf Reish Samechet.
Tuf Reish.
It's over.
Same chapter.
Right, same chapter.
Oh, okay.
Right, the chapters correspond. No, that's okay. The chapters correspond. The halacha numbers don't.
Is there
no,
anything else that corresponds that's meant to be on the chapter?
No.
Oh.
No. Right, his paragraph Aleph has no connection to paragraph Aleph in the Mishnah Brura. The Shulchan Aruch. He made up his own paragraph.
So, there must be books of their references,
okay.
to say. This page. No?
I mean, not really. Well, so yes, a little bit. So the newer Aruch HaShulchans, which this is not, the nice new printings have just started to put in the binding letters that correspond to the Shulchan Aruch. So if he starts going through Shulchan Aruch, halacha number Gimel, Seif Gimel, they'll put a little Gimel over here, and then you know. Now it might jump around. Right? It might be Gimel, then Aleph, then Bet, because He does whatever he wants. Because he, you know, he, but it's more or less in order. And they'll say, in, you know, they'll say in the binding, Gimel, Galid, you know, something like that. And then there'll be nothing for a while. And then now he's up to hay, so you can match them up. Okay. So the newer Arachos Shultans, yes.
Do you ever put an index like we do in Zechariah book?
Yeah.
Down and read, you know, yeah.
Well, no, not for the Aruch HaShulchan. For the Mishnah Berurah, you have that a little bit, because you can scan, you know, this is the main text at the top that's a Shulchan Aruch, and then when you need, but no, it's not perfect, because you still wouldn't know that he talks about fruits. Our Mishnah Berurah chose to talk about fruits here, you wouldn't know that. So no. Actually, yes, there is an index to the Mishnah Berurah. It's called Yad Yisrael.
Oh, yes.
You can buy it, I think it's in Hebrew or English, or both, but yeah, that has an index to all the weird things in Mishnah Berurah. Because yes, you're right. If he just starts talking about a topic and you don't know he was going to talk about that, it's hard to find.
What's it called, Yad?
Yad Yisrael. Because Yisrael in there.
So yeah. If you, say you've gone through both and you're going to go with the Aruch HaShulchan.
Right.
Can you, do you say, like, you know, if you're doing something and someone says, well, where did you get that from? You can feel comfortable and confident. I got it from the Aruch HaShulchan.
Exactly right. Right? So you might say, what are you doing? How can you eat inside at night? Okay. And you say, well, Mishnah Berurah doesn't say it, but I saw it in the Aruch HaShulchan.
Right. So do people say that?
Yeah. Just wait till the book goes.
But as a general rule, we don't paskin by the Aruch HaShulchan.
I don't know if I agree.
No? Okay.
Well, if they both...
Wait, what was your question?
I'm saying, in general, we don't paskin according to the Aruch HaShulchan if, let's say, the Mishnah Berurah feels otherwise.
Exactly. If the Mishnah Berurah discusses the same, even there, not everyone would agree with that necessarily.
Okay.
You still have to know what people do outside of that in the world. I guess people tend to paskin more often like the Mishnah Berurah than the Aruch HaShulchan. If you find something really wacky in the Aruch HaShulchan, you say, I'm going to do that. People might say, well, that's not good enough,
okay.
Right?
So they disagree, the Aruch HaShulchan's always the minority opinion? Or
he's more likely to be a minority opinion, lesser weight, yeah.
So you wouldn't say, well, Mr. Gore doesn't allow it, but I saw it in the Aruch HaShulchan. You wouldn't actually
I don't know if I'd say that.
What about the other three?
That's true, right? There's no Mishnah Berurah on the other three parts of Shulchan Aruch. But again, those are parts you would not interface with all the time. Those are topics about court law or marriage and divorce. So. Right, so those you wouldn't come up every day, but yes, those are ones that you'd have to.
So, by contrast, then Aruch HaShulchan would be good for people who say it's been their family's minhag to do X,
right.
And someone says that's so weird.
Right.
Well, my family's done it forever.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Page 150,
right.
Line 3.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly right.
So rather than saying, okay, I like this weird thing, I'm going to do it.
Right.
It's more like this is how we do it,
so
and
right.
This is who.
Right. Right, you might not. Right, right. You don't want to search for, you know, oddities in Aruch HaShulchan.
How to live an odd Jewish life.
Yeah, right, right. But that could be true in the Mishnah Berurah. I mean, there are things in the Mishnah Berurah that are obscure that we don't really do. So you have to, you know, you always have to see what people do around you. And, you know, if you see something obscure and it's not done, then there's no point doing it. Now, final point about this. The back page, or it's the last page of text, did anyone read the article? I saw a couple people had clicked on it, I don't know who.
Yeah.
Yes? About how the Aruch HaShulchan came to be written. About how the Aruch HaShulchan came to be written. How did it? So look at the right side of this and the left side of this. What are the differences that you see? Yes. Yes. The right and the left.
Clearer print.
Okay, yes. Now that's actually true. Clearer print, different font. The spacing is strange. Look how it goes from page 134 on the left to page 3, or on the right, to page 3 on the left.
There's more Rashi on the right.
Well, this is Aruch HaShulchan. This is Aruch HaShulchan.
Yeah, there's none.
But it goes from page 1.
It's laid out differently.
Right, so different layout.
Script in there.
Oh, Rashi script, yeah, Rashi script, yeah. Because it's a footnote or something. These are right and left in the book. These are the same page spread in a book, but it goes from page 134 to page 3. Why?
That's confusing.
Right? Why? So the to know that
missing
so,
pages.
So oh no, that's not it.
They're different. This is halachot Pesach. This is halachot
Pesach. Right, but they're next to each other.
Because it's they relate to
right.
The same.
This is the next chapter in Shulchan Aruch. It goes from Tafsadi Dalet to Tafsadi Hey. So why are there differences? Right? Why is it new? So the way the Aruch HaShulchan was written was not in books, the way you think of it.
Installments.
Ah, right, exactly. So
what do you mean installments?
So it was written by a man, Rabbi Epstein, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein. He was a very poor man, and whenever he really needed extra money, he would publish another installment, another booklet of his Aruch HaShulchan.
Oh, wow.
Never thinking they would be combined into books the way we have them over here. Right? This is what we think of the Aruch HaShulchan. But he put them out in pamphlets and not in order. If he needed money and it was about to be Purim, so maybe he would put out his booklet on the laws of Purim. Mm-hmm. And maybe he'd put one out one day on the laws of ownership, you know, in Choshen Mishpat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whatever, you know. He would,
so there's a booklet 134 and booklet 3.
So this is the end of one booklet and the beginning of the next one. Right?
So why would people have, is he considered like a serious halakhic
sure.
authority? Why would people have, like if he wasn't providing whole volumes of works, why would they rely on the occasional I need money pamphlet?
because in his time,
it was timely.
Because in his own time, he didn't have the capability to put them in books. So he was known, people would buy his booklets, but
he also spoke, I imagine.
Right, he went around. I assume people knew who he was, but he wasn't considered to be on the level of the Mishnah Berurah because he hadn't put out books the way that the Mishnah Berurah put out books, like we think of books, volumes.
But people just liked him.
Yeah, right. They liked his approach, and they would collect them all, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So later, after World War II, people started to say, "Why don't we try and collect as many of these booklets as we can, put them in order, because they're all over the place." And try and create volumes. And then it became a competing source to the Mishnah Berurah.
Hmm.
Now we think of these two as competing, Mishnah Berurah or HaShulchan. But it really couldn't compete when maybe you had a few booklets, maybe not. Ah, there you go.
Was it after
picture.
His death?
Yes.
Okay.
He died in much earlier than 1908.
Well, he looks like our guys.
But after World War II...
Ashkenazi.
What? Instagram. No.
Wikipedia.
Yeah. That's his Instagram account. That's his Instagram account. Yeah. So that's why... Oh, but I'm saying this because when we think of why people are more likely to choose Mishnah Berurah, one reason is he had a several decades leg up on the publication.
Right.
Because until around 1950, you probably had no access to Aruch HaShulchan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Maybe you had a pamphlet if you were really lucky. Maybe you had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You didn't have volumes the way we do now.
50 years later?
Right. And then so after a while, they said, hey, let's make these into a set. And then now we think of it as being relatively equal to the Mishnah Berurah. But you can see from the way every now and then in the older sets, it's just a new page, right? All of a sudden, it's back to page one, and it's a different font because this might have been a pamphlet from 30 years later, right? Or,
And it's just collected like that.
Right, and then they just sort of took them all, and now it's been retyped in the newer ones. But I like the older ones because you really see how it came out. Right? You can see some hints. The first ones are Choshen Mishpat, as the first pamphlets, and those are harder to read. And you kind of get a taste of what he was doing here.
Did they find them all?
Perfect, so no. And that's why there are gaps. So in that article, there are gaps. There continue to be gaps. Nothing on topics people would usually learn, which makes sense. Maybe they made more copies of topics people learn. But there are topics in Evan Ha'ezer about marriage and divorce, and I think Nidarim vows, still never found. They found some as recently as 1992.
Wow.
Like in great-grandchildren's, files. They found these pamphlets of Aruch HaShulchan that had not been put into the sets. So now it's in the sets.
I've looked up things where he doesn't have, and I don't know if it's because things are missing or maybe he just didn't write on that.
We don't know. I think the assumption is that he did and that it was lost. I've seen that. Maybe he just didn't write certain sections, but it seems like people assume he did and then they got lost in time because there was that, 40-year gap between when he died and when the set came out. So it could still be that they'll be they'll be found. Yep.
Did his style change over?
Not radically. No, it reads pretty smoothly through, right? He didn't change too much the approach to how he did it. Okay, so that is the Aruch HaShulchan of the Mishneh Berurah. Moving on to the idea of navigation. So now we've seen a little navigation. We just learned how to go backwards in time. I want to look at page 6b in the main pamphlet. In the big booklet, page 6b. So now we're back to the full pamphlet, if you're listening online. And it's page 6b, and I want to do a little Gemara, and we'll see why we're doing it in a second. Okay, so this is from Pesachim. This is a Gemara about Pesach. The top
sugya.
A new sugya, yeah.
Is that this?
It's yeah, it's yeah, the, nice. It's the right. Yeah, it's loose, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
later. 6b? Oh, 6b. Well, so we'll share. So page 6b. Oh, there it is. Okay. So it's the loose page. Page 6b. Top of the page. So this is all pretty much a connected Gemara going down. Page Kuf. See at the top it says Kuf, the big letter Kuf.
Mm-hmm.
It's page 100. Two dots mean side B. Okay. But that's not our main thing. Otam, new sugya. Otam b'nei Adam. Those people. So apparently it wasn't universal. Shekitshu b'veit ha-knesset, who make kiddush in shul on Friday night, right? Our shul does that, mm-hmm. Right? Most shuls that we go to here do that, right? Not every shul does. In Israel they don't. Chabad does not, right? But our shuls, meaning though, this is the Gemara, those people who make kiddush in shul on Friday night, Amar Rav, Rav says, Gidei yayin lo yatsu, they have not fulfilled their obligation of Barei Pari Hagafen, meaning they need to go home and make another Hagafen. But Yidei Kiddush Yatsu. But they did fulfill their obligation of making Kiddush. Mikadesh HaShabbat, Asher Gishonu B'Bitzvotav, it's Ivanu, the paragraph of actual Kiddush. There's wine and then there's Kiddush. So Rav says that they fulfilled their obligation of Kiddush, of hearing Kiddush, of making, but not wine. So they need to go home, make the Hagafen Bracha, and then move on with their meal, Hamotzi, whatever.
Are you talking about only the person who made it or anyone who heard it?
Anyone who heard it too,
okay.
I would say.
So
good
is
question.
That like on Shabbos day, like you hear Kiddush, but the cup didn't get to you? And
exactly.
So you
exactly
didn't
right.
Drink, but you heard Kiddush, so when you go
exactly.
Home, you're going to have to.
Right, so some people in the day will go home and not, but it's, the only difference
it's
is that.
The only
difference is that in the day you can have in mind. This is not for us. We'll see. At night we don't still have that practice. Also in the day we don't really make kiddush per se. All we really do is hagafen. At night there's two brachot on kiddush. There's a hagafen and then there's this extra bracha, right? Mikadesh HaShabbat. That's really kiddush. In the day we don't do that. We say some psukim, but that's not really kiddush. All you can do is hagafen.
So there's a. You're obligated to hear Kiddush, but it doesn't come along with an obligation to partake of something?
In the daytime?
At night.
At night, this is what Rav would say. That's what Rav would say. He'd say you fulfilled your obligation of hearing Kiddush, but you should still go home and make a Hagafen because you moved to a new place.
Let's say you didn't. So is there...
You don't have to have one.
You don't have to. You just have to hear the Kiddush. You don't have to partake of anything.
Correct. Yeah, so that's Rav. Ushmul Amar, Rav and Shmuel always argue, first generation Amorayim. Ushmul Amar, Shmuel says, now we're in the next block here, Af Yidei Kiddush Lo Yatsu. You haven't even fulfilled the obligation of Kiddush, meaning you accomplished absolutely nothing.
Wait, where? How did you just jump from
the
up here to down here?
Af Yidei.
That's
just a new page. It's a new page.
Oh,
this
okay.
was the end of the previous page.
Oh, okay.
Page.
Can I ask you a question before you move?
Of course.
How do you know that the new sugya starts from Otam?
Oh, that's just because I learned it. That's next year. We'll do basic Gemara next year.
Wait, I didn't hear your question.
Huh?
She said, how do you know that Otam is a new subject?
Out of the scope.
I still can't hear because he did.
She said, how do you know the word Otam is a new section of Gemara?
Yeah, so
where is
it?
Say anything.
Up at the top.
Right at the top, right at the beginning.
It's from experience.
It's like one long sentence.
Next year, next year. Next year, next year.
That's how much I always get.
We'll do it next year.
Fine, I'll ask
you. It's just, I saw the previous one and it ended and then, but that's right. It's a good question. Your question is right, I just... So Shmuel says you've accomplished nothing. If you go to shul Friday night, you hear Kiddush, you have to go home and do both Kiddush again and Hagafen again. So what's the obvious question?
Why
do it at all? And by the way, that's a good question. A similar question for Rav. Why did you make Hagafen in shul if you weren't Yosei that?
Exactly right.
So the Gemara asks that question. Ela la Rav. So according to Rav, first line in the new block here, excuse me, Lama le the kiddushe bevete. So why should I go home and make kiddush? Meaning, if I fulfilled my obligation of kiddush in shul, why should I go home to my bayit, to my house, levete, and make kiddush again? Right.
Yeah.
Oh, second line of the. So ela le Rav again, according to Rav, then lama le the kiddushe bevete. Why should I make kiddush at home? Right. Because he said that I already fulfilled my obligation of Kiddush and Shul. So why should I go home and do it again?
Because there's other people living
home. Ah, that's it. That's the Gemara's answer. Kidei lehotzi banu b'nei beito. Because there's other people at home.
They should all come to Shul.
What if they're in Shul?
If they all came to Shul.
It's true. The Gemara doesn't ask, what if I live alone? This is, right? You could now you can see that. Now you can picture the Mishnah Brura and Yerach HaShulchan arguing about a single person.
So you make Kiddush and Shul for people who don't have a home to go to, and you make
right.
Kiddush at home because they didn't come to Shul.
Exactly. Ushmul.
So the first part you just said, what was it?
You make Kiddush and Shul for people who might not be eating someplace, so they can hear Kiddush.
Okay.
And you make Kiddush at home because there are people who didn't come to Shul to hear Kiddush, so there's always someone left out, so you
covering
make it twice.
Right.
Covering both bases.
Right. Okay. That's exactly what the Gemara says. There's Shmuel going on. There's Shmuel, the third line here. Lama leila kiddushe bevei kanishta. Why should I make kiddush in shul at all? Remember, I don't fulfill anything in shul according to Shmuel.
Especially if I'm going to go home and do it.
Right. So why do we, and that's why you'll see so many places don't do it.
But it almost feels like a bracha in vain.
Correct.
I'm sitting there in shul on Friday night. I'm like, I know I'm going to go home and make kiddush.
Right.
Why am I
right.
That's
why.
I wanted to also say it as well. Like, oh, you're allowed to say it once.
That's why. Yes. That's why we do what weird minhag right after that.
Have a kid.
Bring
kids
it to a kid.
But sometimes a kid doesn't.
Well,
no,
so
kids
so here, I agree. Here, in our shul, what Rabbi Friedman has started is that if there's no kid, there's no kiddush.
Oh really?
No kid, no kiddush.
Kid-ish.
It's a very right. It's a very kiddish thing to do. If there's no kid, there's no kiddush. But there is certainly
that
on the books.
That almost never happens.
Right, usually happens, there's a kid. But there is an opinion that if there's no kid, the person can drink it. Because you can make, it's part of the davening.
Yeah,
it's become built into
right.
The fabric of the davening. Which is not a fully great answer. That's why all of Israel doesn't do it. Meaning Israel, the land of Israel, doesn't do it. State of Israel, they don't do that now. They generally don't. You'll see yeshivot and chabad outside of Israel too. Don't make kiddush in shul. But Shmuel says, why do we do it at all? So I see a hand.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah.
So if you were in shul, and it's not your minhag to do this,
right.
Could you sit there and say, so, is this for me?
It doesn't affect you. It doesn't,
right,
it doesn't
like
affect you one way or another.
Say, I'm not, you would say on this particular kid,
yeah,
I
that's
still stand.
What
and you're not anyway. Even if you think you are Yotzei in shul, you're not. You still have to go home and do it again. You were wrong.
Should you say amen?
Yeah, you can say amen. It's a good point, but it's a bracha. It's a good question, though, because it's not really it's a bracha. So Shmuel says, why do you do it in shul at all if you're not Yosei? And here, for the first time, you have an aleph in the air.
Where are we?
Fourth line.
Beginning of the fourth line.
The circle one.
The letter aleph.
Oh, or on the side.
Ah. Matching letters. Mm. But you see it but in the Gemara part. You see the olive too. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says, why do we do Kiddush and Shul at all if you're not, you don't say anything? La'afuke orchim yidei chovatan. So that guests who are in Shul, well, as Evelyn said, so the Gemara goes on, the achlu v'shatzu v'gonu v'neknishta, there used to be guests who would sleep in the shul. Shuls were hotels, were hostels, and people would stay there. And that's why they made Kiddush in shul. So for us, there usually are not, doesn't apply. On the other hand, the Gemara says it. So how do we balance this? Doesn't seem to apply. So you see the Aleph, right? That Aleph, match up that Aleph before the word Ushmuel. See the little Aleph?
Where's that?
The little Aleph?
Right?
So that matches up exactly. On the left side of the page, just to the left, you see the Ein Mishpat, Ner Mitzvah. See that?
Is it this? I can't read it, but is
this? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're not going to really look it up now anyway. But the Ein Mishpat, Ner Mitzvah, is a navigational tool right there on the page that will send you forwards in time. It'll catapult you in time from the page of the Gemara into the Rambam, which is later in history, 1200, and into the Shulchan Aruch, which is even later in history, 1500. So if you're learning a Gemara and you want to know what's the halacha, right, you can do two things. You can look it up in Shulchan Aruch. But you don't even have to look it up. The beauty of it is, if the letter is right before those words, then those words are the halacha. Now you can look them up in the Shulchan Aruch or the Rambam and read it inside and you'll find out more information, and that's fine. But even if you don't do that, it will work every time. It's foolproof that the words that are just after that letter are the halacha. So what I'm pointing out to you is that letter didn't appear before the Shmuel's opinion, because that wasn't the halacha, that you're going to say nothing. And it didn't appear before Rav's halacha, because it's not true that you're half Yotzei.
Those are their opinions.
Their opinions are not the halacha.
Right.
The halacha is that you are, the halacha is closer to Shmuel's opinion than Rav's, but it's only true if you are a guest in shul. So we make Kiddush in shul for the benefit of people who will not have somewhere to go. People who stay in the shul, or I would say people who aren't going to hear it later.
Those would be a reason to continue doing it even if there's no kids, because there might be people who are davening but are not going to make it to shul,
right,
for whatever reason.
Correct. So for them, right, or if
but
you go back...
Halacha.
So that's the halacha.
But it's not the halacha. The halacha is based on the fact that people used to sleep.
Right. Maybe we can make an extension, but correct. And by the letter of the law, the halacha is, apparently, and if you look it up, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, that Kiddush and Shul is for the benefit of people who will be staying in the Shul, and that's why the Shulchan Aruch says, maybe, says we do it, but some people don't do it. He's not thrilled about the minhag nowadays, because, as we pointed out, it's not terribly relevant nowadays. But he says it was originally because of the people who were staying in the Shuls. So Shmuel is correct. Shmuel said, you don't say nothing. And he's correct in as much as most people, because they're going to be going home afterwards, are Yotzei nothing.
So only the people who are not going to go home and make Kiddush,
right,
are
Yotzei. Right? So the halacha is closer to Shmuel, because Shmuel was saying that you need, if you move to a new place, then the brachot you've made in the old place don't apply. And this is a general, you can read more on the page. He talks about if you make a mizonot and then you go to a new house, if you eat a cookie, then you go somewhere else, it really doesn't apply. Right? He talks about maybe in your own house, maybe, but if you go to a different place and you didn't have it in mind, then you really should make a new mizonot.
What if you do have it in mind? If you say, I'm making this for everything I'm going to be eating for the next 4 hours.
Oh, no. That,
I mean, like,
well, like,
I, like at a meal. Or
right.
Yeah, but like for
right.
lunch or whatever.
Correct.
It would be.
So, I don't want to say offhand. I think...
Because when you change your place, aren't you really supposed to conclude? And
yeah.
To
go,
it,
right. Like, if you go, you should go back to your first place to make the bracha afterwards. But if you knew for sure you're going to one other place, then yes, that would apply. You wouldn't have to make the bracha.
So just, again, like...
No? Okay, yeah.
So just to try and understand how this is laid out.
Yeah.
So first it brings the opinions of people.
Right.
And then it gives you the halakha? Or does it
vary? It varies. The Gemara, it, you know, goes in whatever direction it goes.
Okay.
The navigational tool, which is only a few hundred years old, it's not the Gemara didn't put those letters there.
Uh-huh.
That's recent. That's a few hundred years old. So they went through, someone went through a couple hundred years ago. Right, and he put that little aleph there.
Uh-huh.
And then on the side of the page, he said, oh, you can look this up in the Rambam over there, Shulchan Aruch over there.
Does it differentiate?
So all the little letters signify this is the halakha.
Exactly. Assuming it's a big letter, not Rashi script like we talked
right.
about before. Assuming it's matches.
So this is the halakha, and if you want to know more about it,
right.
look for it in
exactly.
Rambam.
Exactly.
Does it differentiate whether it's in Rambam or the
yes.
Shulchan Aruch?
So that we'll definitely talk about. But we'll talk a bit next week about how exactly to use that. But yes, it says Rambam said go here, and you know, it says it more or less.
But if you want to understand the topic, you want to understand something, and you're learning it here, it's not good enough just to look at the halakha. You have to look at other people's opinions. I mean, they all bring.
Depends how much you want to know the topic.
Like if I just want to know what's the deal,
right.
do kiddush?
Exactly.
Happy, you know?
Right.
So do I look at the halakha? Do I look at all the arguments of everyone?
Oh, you learn the Gemara. Are you either one?
You
depends how much time you have. I mean,
you just draw the Shulchan Aruch.
Open up
right,
the Shulchan Aruch, right?
Well,
open a Shulchan Aruch and then use and then remember the Be'er HaGola would send me back into this Gemara, and this Gemara sends me into that section of Shulchan Aruch. So these tools send us back and forth.
So when my kid says he learned Be'ian versus Be'kiyas,
right?
Be'ian means he's doing all this back and forth stuff about one sentence, and Be'kiyas means he's going faster and not doing all the back and forth.
That's true. Correct. The only difference I would say is there's different ways to learn Be'iyu. One way would be to look up the halacha every time. Another way would be to ask questions on the Gemara that the commentaries would deal with and open up all the commentaries, you know, which is a different strand of learning than we've even talked about.
Oh, I see.
Right? Some people like to learn what's called Aliba da Hilchata, which is each Gemara I'm going to open up the Shulchan Aruch and really learn what to do, and that's one way of learning. But another is to say, I'm not learning to know what to do necessarily. Eventually I'll know what to do, but I'm not learning for that. I want to understand the Gemara itself in a deeper way. How could Rav say this if Shmuel says that? Well, you know, you could take this topic in a direction of, well, are they really arguing about whether you're allowed to go to a different place? What's with Rav's opinion? Why would I be Yotze Kiddush but not Yayin, because what's this halfway thing, right? If I have to make a new bracha if I go somewhere else, then that should be true with both of those brachot. Why would Birchot HaMitzvot in that case be different than Birchot HaNehanin, brachot on food, on wine? Wait, why that? So that's not a halachic question per se, right? Unless it has repercussions for the halacha, but that's, you can get into that, and then, right? So the Gemara could take you a million directions. Right, you never know where it's going to lead you. You could read a Rambam and then start analyzing that. So there's a lot of ways of analyzing. Right, our study here is halachic, but that's not the only way to learn. Okay, anything else I want to show you here? Okay, so when you're reading a Gemara, you have those letters that show you this is the halacha, and then if you really want to look it up, you can do that, which we'll learn about. You know, I'll show you right now. And then we'll end with this, since we're on this topic anyway. Go to page 8. Page 8 in the big book. It's backwards a little bit. Yeah. Page 8. And now I've zoomed in on it a little bit. All right, so this should look familiar. Right? You have letters again. Right? You see the dollar, see the top of the page? You have the Dalid, right, and you have the Hay, right, and there's lines going out from them that I drew, right, the Dalid and the Hay, right, same, you know, I'm just zooming in here, but it's the same idea. Now, on the bottom or lower down on this page, I've zoomed in on the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. So Ellen said before, will it differentiate? So yes. So this is...
The top Rambam?
Well, the top is Gemara.
It's what?
Page 8, Gemara.
Gemara.
The top is Gemara. Which words?
The Moshe Bar.
Yes, that's Gemara. Exactly. That's Gemara. And you see the Dalet and the Hey, those superscript letters are saying this is the halacha. Now, if I really want to look it up, I can do that, because now I go to the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah, farther down on the page, and you see the, now, tricky thing about Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah, you see the big chet and then a slightly smaller aleph?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you see the bigger tet, smaller bet. So you have to ignore the big letters. The big letters, I hate this, but the big letters are counting the number of halachot in the perek, in the chapter of Gemara. Mm. Not sure why. I wish they would take it out. It's all it will do is confuse you. So you have to ignore the big letters.
How big is big? Which ones are
you? The chet, right, chet, tet, yud, those are to ignore.
That's how many halachas are in
the number of halachot in the Gemara.
Right, which is not relevant. Right. Well, I've never found a reason for it. I don't know. So the big letters we're going to ignore. Then you have the smaller Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey. Mm-hmm. So we need the Dalet and the Hey, because we had the Dalet and the Hey at the top of the page.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so there's a Yud and a Hey.
Right, we ignore the Yud, we ignore the Yud Aleph.
And who's the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah?
I could look up his name.
But it's a person.
Yeah, someone actually did this tool, went through the whole Gemara and did this. Same person was the guy who did the Bar Hagolah. I don't remember his name. 18th century.
18th.
Yeah, I'll look it up. I'll post it on the thing. Interesting.
Where's
and
the Dalet?
So the Dalet.
It's next to the
Gimel.
Gimel Dalet.
Gimel Dalet.
Meaning Gimel Dalet means.
Joshua Boaz Mavora.
Okay.
Oh. It's a Spanish exile living in Italy.
Okay. What year?
1546 to 51. Is that possible?
Yeah, I could be wrong. I could be wrong, yeah, sure.
What were the years again?
1546
to 51.
No, that's
Rabbi.
No.
That's only 5 years.
Maybe that's when he wrote it.
Maybe that's when he wrote it.
Yeah, that's I'll look not it up. His lifespan, probably.
What was his name? Genius. Really a genius. 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years.
What was his name?
What was his name?
Rabbi Joshua Boaz Ben Shimon Baruch. He died in 1557.
So Joshua Baruch.
Does he have an acronym?
Joshua. So he did the Ein Mishpat.
Joshua Boaz Mavarach Mavarach.
And he also did the Bar Hagolah. And he did another thing. He also wrote notes that would send you from the Gemara backwards to the Tanakh, called the Torah
War.
That's
what I was going to ask. That.
Yeah.
That was going to be my question.
Yeah.
Maybe going back is, how is the Gemara rooted to Tanakh?
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week. We'll do that next
week. How does
week.
That work?
Okay. Yeah, that's like right here. So we'll get to that very soon. Back next week.
Okay.
See, it's a cliffhanger. So 1 second. So Steve said, why is there a Gimel and a Dalet together? Why? You figure that out. Why is there a Gimel and a Dalet together? Yeah, because Gimel and Dalet are different places in the Gemara text, but they're in the same paragraph in the Shulchan Aruch, or maybe the same place in the Rambam. Right? The Rambam quotes them together. Where the Shulchan Aruch quotes them in the same line.
Okay.
That happens sometimes. The Hay is separate here because it's a separate place in one or both of those. So let's look at Gimel Dalet. Mai, see the word Mai?
Mm-hmm.
That means Maimon. Who's Maimon?
Rambam.
Rambam. Mm-hmm. Right? Maimon is Rambam.
Where? Next to the Dalet.
Next to the Gimel Dalet.
Oh.
You have Mai, that's Maimon. That's the Rambam, of course. By Rambam, what do we mean?
Rambam,
my mom. Mishnah Torah, perfect. Mishnah Torah,
right? It's back here.
Mishnah Torah is the same as Yad Chazaka.
Exactly, right. The Rambam, the Mishnah Torah, the Yad Chazaka, it's all the same thing. The Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah, or the Yad Chazaka.
Oh, thanks.
Then you have Pei Bet. Pei Bet, Perek Bet. Now it gets easier. Mei Hilchot, Shabbat.
Halacha
Chaf Bet. Done. Bam. That is a source. I can look that up.
Cool.
Right? I can literally go back here.
Right? And now the only thing is you have to know what's in Zmanim, holidays, but other than that, you go to Zmanim, you go to Shabbat. Perek what?
Chaf Bet.
Halacha number Perek Bet. Oh, Perek Bet. Halacha Chaf Bet. Halacha Chaf Bet. It's fine. And here it is. Right? And I can learn that halacha.
Oh, cool.
And then he goes on. Tusha. What do you think that is? Taf Vav Shin Ayin. Taf. Tet Vav Shin Ayin. What's that?
Tor
and Shulchan Aruch. Because so remember, Tor and Shulchan Aruch are the same chapters. Torah and Shulchan Aruch are the same chapters. Shulchan Aruch is just a shortened version of the Torah and the Beit Yosef.
Right. And why is it
Bet,
not
Al? Why is it Bet? What do you mean?
Last thing you say, how this time it's Bet, not
Al.
Mm-hmm.
Seif. Seif. What do you mean? Oh, she's reading it on there. To find Halacha Hey, so you look in Orach Chaim, because you see, so Tur V'Shulchan Aruch, Orach Chaim, Aleph Chet, Siman Shin Mem Dalid, chapter 344. Yeah, but that's a funny thing. They switch it because the word Shmad, it means heresy.
Oh.
That'll also trick you. So they trick the letter, they switch the letters, but it's Shin Mem Dalid. Don't be fooled. There is no Shin Dalid Mem. That doesn't mean anything.
So it's on the back page, is that what that means?
Nope. Oh, Seif, no, because in Shulchan Aruch, halacha number Aleph, paragraph Aleph. So Shulchan Aruch, okay, Shulchan Aruch. Well, there's four parts of Shulchan Aruch. So I need to know which one. Orach Chaim is the first one. By the way, if it's Orach Chaim, why is that good?
Because
the Mishnah Berurah. Right? Which makes sense, because this is about Shabbat. Orach Chaim. It's all coming together, maybe. Orach Chaim. No. Orach Chaim is the first part of Shulchan Aruch. It's about daily law and Shabbat and holidays. And that's the part that has Mishnah Berurah on it. So I can get my Mishnah Berurah off the shelf. I'll explain to you after.
Yeah,
stay after class.
This is confusing, saying, however, this time, the Seif is Bet, not Aleph.
Oh, Seif Bet, because in Gimel Dalid, it ended with Seif Aleph, halacha number Aleph. And then I go down one. Oh, Sham means Ibid. You know Ibid in English?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing as the previous one. Mm-hmm. So Sham means Ibid. Same source as the last one. But now it's Seif Bet. If you think about Ibid, Sham is the same thing. Right? Meaning, Sham means same as the previous paragraph, except maybe there's one small difference. Or maybe not. You could just say Sham, and that means same as the last one.
What does the word Seif literally mean?
That's a halacha number. Literally, I'm not sure. But for us, it's like paragraph one, paragraph two. So what he's saying in the final one is same as the previous paragraph, same chapter number anyway, but instead of halacha number one, it would be halacha number two. So that's a little... We'll practice all this. Not so bad. Okay, next week we'll be here. Two weeks is Tisha B'Av. The next week is normal.
Steve's not going home.
Steve?
No.
He's just informing
out. Oh. I got it.
Do that, buddy.
Okay. I'll post the audio tonight, so if you can listen.
Okay.
What did you say that you read?
The article.
Oh, the article, yeah. I posted a couple of things. I posted a link to an article about how the Aruch HaShulchan is written. But I just told you anyway.
And where are you posting?
The content.
Oh, good. So it's rabbizalish.com/halacha.
If we were studying, it's
in an email, but...
For the content.
Yeah, did anyone not get... Is anyone not getting the emails?
It
sounds like Sarah.
Now,
is anyone not getting the
emails? These are different timepieces, too, right?
Yeah.
This is Gemara.
The
Mishnahs
that
are in the Rambam to Gemara.
Yes.
This is a current edition of it, it sounds like.
Awfully close. Yeah, I mean, there are minor differences in words occasionally. And there are differences in how they're broken up. Sometimes the Mishnah and Mishnah will... To have
so
Mishnah Aleph, Mishnah Bet, and then the Gemara,
yeah,
they'll combine
so
them,
so we didn't
or they'll break it up
yet,
in different places.
So
this
was
and there are minor textual differences, but
this was
mostly.
From
the
Gemara.
No, it's original.
a Gemara.
It's more original than that.
So are you going to study Talmud?
No. The Mishnah follows its own order. There's a volume.
It follows its own order, but the
context that what it's talking about. Well, it can't contradict Pesukim, but it might not say where what Pesuk exactly is coming from. It might not quote a Pesuk for everything. Sometimes it does. But, you know, the first Mishnah and all of Mishnah is about what time to say Shema. When do we start saying Shema? Which, how many hours of the day? It's not really in Chumash. But it's based on Chumash because Chumash says when you wake up and when you go to sleep. So then the Mishnah comes along and says, well, I think that's 3 hours into the day or 9 hours into the day.
It sounds like it's not.
So it can't go against the Chumash, but it might not always be perfectly aligned in a,
it's not a work,
black on white
it's
way. But that's the tradition of how it was meant.
Yeah. Because they include these notes and these links of how to get from one.
Thank you so much. Of course. Thank you for coming. But,